When you grow up, you tend to get told the world is the way that it is. Your life is just to live your life inside the world and try not to bash into the walls too much. But that's a very limited life. Life can be much broader once you discover one simple fact, and that is that everything around you that you call life was made up by people that are no smarter than you. And you can change it. You can influence it. You can build your own things that other people can use. It's to shake off this erroneous notion that life is just there and you're just gonna live in it versus embrace it, change it, improve it, make your mark upon it. And once you learn that, you'll never be the same again.
So, what are we gonna do now?
We're gonna put a dent in the universe.
Here's to the crazy ones. The misfits. The rebels. The troublemakers. The round pegs in the square holes. The ones who see things differently. They're not fond of rules, and they have no respect for the status quo. You can quote them, disagree with them, glorify or vilify them. About the only thing you can't do is ignore them. Because they change things. They push the human race forward. And while some may see them as the crazy ones, we see genius. Because the people who are crazy enough to think they can change the world are the ones who do. That.
How do you take working for the weekend to putting a dent in the universe? That's what we're going to look at today. How do you take a life that's been given to us and make it significant with what we do every single day? Good morning, everyone. As Kurt mentioned, my name's Paul. I'm honored to be here with you this morning. I'm thankful for the Crosspoint team, including you, for allowing me to be here. Good news is you had no choice in the matter. So if you're disappointed, that's a you problem. just being honest. But I'm really glad you guys are here. I'm, in all honesty, honored to be here. I get a chance to do, because of Crosspoint, something that less than 1% of the population loves to do, which is get in front of people and speak. So I'm just, so you know, I'm picturing you all in your underwear. That's kind of how it helps me. No, I'm not. I'm just teasing. All right. So glad to be here. We're talking about this notion of building intentionally into people to grow them, to help them develop. And we're going to look at the life of Jesus and what he did with his 12 disciples specifically on how he built intentionally into them and some of the things that he did that we can model in our everyday life, just like Kurt said, in whatever your work, quote unquote, may be. So last week we looked at this continuum of, hey, increased character or high character and high competence allows us to do unlimited good. And we also looked at, hey, the opposite of that, which is low character and high competence, puts us in a position where we can do unlimited harm. So what we want to look at today is continue that forward. And instead of looking at it from a character competence perspective, we want to look at it from a intentional or intentionality and growth perspective. So the higher your intentions are, the more intentional you are, and the more growth you pursue, the unlimited good you can do, and specifically in the lives of people around you. So that's going to be really our focus. And we're going to look at this idea of coaching. We're going to try to unpack this idea of coaching, looking at the master coach in Jesus and what he did. So one of the things that I think of when I think of coaching is some guys like this. I think this is often easy to look at. And we think, I tried to find the craziest looking coaches I could find. I could have made a whole Jim Harbaugh one down to the left, but I just gave him one section there. But this is what we often think of when we think of coaches. And I want to spin off of this in terms of, hey, we're not necessarily looking. Usually there's this kind of high intensity type of coaching that's got a start and a finish. It's usually in a game or a competitive environment. That's a little bit different. And I'm not above that. Just so you know, I coach my son's soccer team, and I was that guy yesterday. But I will say we're 4-0, and we had a nice victory yesterday, just saying. That, by the way, is all coaching. I'm just telling you right there. So I'm not above that. So there was a few moments at the beginning of the game where we got a great group of kids. They know what they're doing. They know where to be, but they weren't, right? They weren't doing what they're supposed to be doing. So Hevesy turned into one of those guys for a brief moment. I blacked out, but then I came to, and everything was fine. But we're not looking at the context of coaching in this way. We're really looking at a very intentional kind of day in and day out growth and development of people around us, and how that applies and how we can apply that. So we can learn so much, and we can kind of dig so deeply into the life of Jesus and what he did with his disciples, and that's very, very important. And here's something else. As I put this message together this week, one thing that really hit me, which is not a huge revelation maybe to some of you, but it was for me. So remember, Jesus knew everything. He was God, is God, had human flesh, came into the dark planet, as C.S. Lewis calls it, and so he came from light into darkness, lived here, and he knew everything because he was God. So he knew he only had 3 years to build into these 12 guys. So he knew that he couldn't force it on them. He knew that at some point he was leaving, and it was up to them to put a dent in the universe, right? It's up to them to change the world. So I think it's very interesting. He could have just forced it on them. He could have told them, hey, this is how it's going to be. But as you look at the life of Jesus, especially his interaction with his disciples that we'll look at in depth today, he was very intentional. He was absolutely coaching them, asking a lot of questions, telling a lot of stories, making sure that the message of him and his truth and who he is and was and was going to be sunk in. Because so often we, at least for me, I find myself trying to impart truth and things upon people by telling it to them. And I often find that that doesn't stick nearly as much as helping them develop that truth in that direction themselves. That's something very important. Now, he needed to tell them and coach them in a way that when he was gone, they had the courage to change the world. I will say one thing that helps with that is when you die and 3 days later you walk out of a grave, that typically helps people have the courage to carry your message forward, if you know what I'm saying. So that helps too. But the coaching piece was very important. So let's look at that a little bit. Before we do, let's dig in a little bit about coaching. All right, so coaching can be defined in a bunch of different ways, but I found one that works. Coaching is the process, and this is important, of equipping people with the tools, knowledge, and opportunities they need to develop themselves and become more effective. Develop themselves and become more effective. So that's really important. How do we help others around us become more effective? And especially a community of believers, that's our ultimate charge when we give our life to Christ. He comes in, turns us, and starts making us more effective. And in turn, the message of the kingdom, of the mission of the kingdom, is to turn around and make those around us more effective. So I thought that was a very important one. John Wooden says, a coach is someone who can give direction without causing resentment. Gives direction without causing resentment. Very, very important. And that's where we'll unpack this idea of using questions to develop that, which is really important piece of not causing resentment. So coaching is an intentional development of others. So one of the things that we'll focus on as well is the intentionality of coaching and ultimately the intentionality of growth. So anything in life, if you think about it, exercising or working or learning a new language, that was one of my New Year's resolutions that went by the wayside, honestly. But anything like that, you got to be intentional about it. You don't just wake up one day and it happens. So there's a certain level of intentionality. Now, I want to make sure as we dig into this coaching thing, this is not a message on parenting. That comes next week. So I want to make sure. So there's going to be some principles about coaching that absolutely will apply, especially for those of you who have some older children. There's going to definitely be some principles here that definitely will apply very specifically, and younger kids as well. But this is not a parenting thing. So if you try to apply these directly to your parenting techniques and it doesn't work, you can email me at kurtw@crosspointweb.org. Okay, so just a note of caution. All right, now, in a community of believers here at Crosspoint, coaching can also be directed back to or tied to this term you may have heard before called discipleship. So discipleship is one of those insider churchy terms, but is also very important to the development and growth of a community of believers. So Rick Warren, you may have heard of him, great leader in the church today, in Christ Church today, says this about discipleship, and this is important to make the connection here today. It's the process of transformation that changes us to be increasingly more like Christ through the Word, the Spirit, and circumstance. So I want to make, we're not going to spend a whole lot of, I mean, discipleship is a whole other message or series of messages for sure, but want to just make that connection to what we're talking about. So when I talk coaching kind of in a broader sense in our day-to-day lives, think of it also in terms of discipleship within a community of believers, both discipleship of ourselves, allowing the community of believers to disciple us and being intentional about that, and then also being intentional about us building into the community of believers as well through volunteering and all different kinds of ways within the community of believers like here at Crosspoint. All right, so the ultimate idea of coaching or discipleship at the end of the day is, how do we become more like Jesus every day? And how do we help those around us, whether they're believers or not, to become more like Jesus? Now, I will a caveat there. There's a message today here for those who may not have given their life to Jesus, and we'll unpack that toward the end. But ultimately, your main goal, whether you believe it or not, whether you're into it yet or not, God's main goal for you is to receive Him in this life and become every day more like. And now you can reject that, still doesn't change it. That's what He wants of you. And so those of us who have done that and given our lives to Christ, that's His challenge to us, and that's what He does within us every day, make Him more like Him. So when you look at this idea of coaching, that's what it's ultimately about, spending each day we're given to be more like Jesus. So what gives? Why do I have an opportunity? Why am I standing up here? What authority do I have? I'm thankful to Kurt, because I am now an expert in something, because he said, you know, there's experts up here. So I took that note, going to be adding that to my LinkedIn profile. I'd be an expert in something. No. So why am I here? So I've had an opportunity through just God's grace and blessings on my life. I've had an opportunity to be in the business community for almost 15 years, and 10 of that I've had an opportunity to lead others in some kind of official capacity. And I say official because there's a lot of leaders in this room that may not have the title to go on along with it. And those are some of the most effective leaders in my view. So, but I've had an opportunity to be a part of leadership and in different capacities with several different businesses over the last 10 years or so. And it's one thing that I've learned as a leader, which is very, very important, is I'm not successful and I like to win. And I can't win unless the people around me win. So winning is not something, or having success in business is not something that because you have a big title you can just demand. You will win because I want to win. It just doesn't work that way. So that's why this coaching and development of people around you to help them grow, to help them be more effective, helps me win more. And as I say that, it sounds really selfish, actually. So didn't intend for that to be, but apparently I'm selfish and something I got to work on. But I like to win, and it takes the people around you as a leader to win. And here's the other thing I've learned about leadership. The bigger the title, the more difficult it is to add value. Let me say that again. The bigger the title, the more of a challenge, the more difficult, the harder you have to work to add value to other people, because this, it starts to seep in on you. Well, I got this big title. I'm entitled to this, and they should do that, and don't they know who I am? And all of that stuff starts to seep into how you work every day, and you just assume certain things are going to happen, and certain people are going to act a certain way because I got this big title. Check me out. So you really have to work. The higher your, the bigger your title is, to really, hey, how do I add value into people? How do I help grow them? And as Kurt mentioned earlier, how can I be intentional about that? Because if I'm not intentional about it, it's not gonna happen on its own. Here's what I know about growth, all right? It's very important. Growth in any area of life is born exclusively out of intention. So remember that. Gotta be intentional. So there may be something in your life right now where you're thinking, I gotta do that. I gotta make sure I do that. It's born out of intention. So if you want to grow in that particular area, it's got to be intentional. That's why the message of Jesus is so wonderful, because all it takes is one simple step of intention to let him in, to let him take over, and growth starts to happen spiritually, which is a wonderful thing. All right, so let's dive in. I want to share with you real quick a guy named Keith Rosen. He's a kind of a thought leader. Most of you probably haven't heard of him, but I've read a lot of his stuff. Great, great leader in terms of sales coaching and coaching in general. He says this about questions, and this is very important as we dig into coaching. Questions are the very core of all coaching tools and strategies. Questions are where great opportunities are born, new ideas are ignited, self-imposed limitations are exposed, and vast possibilities are discovered. And we're going to see that in the life of Jesus. He asked a lot of great, great questions, and we're going to dive into that. But that I wanted to make sure we understand. So one thing that I'll try to tie back together as we finish up here in a few minutes is this idea of using questions to get people beyond their current limitations or beyond their current space. Now, asking questions is one of those things where it takes a little bit longer to get people on board versus, hey, I know what the right thing is, so here, take it, eat it, and like it. That's an easy thing for us to do, especially if we've got a big title. But for often, the best growth and the most long-lasting growth happens in people when you bring them along, when they are able to understand and the truth is revealed, they reveal in that process. And so what questions do in a coaching process is they bring people along, so people, they start understanding it themselves. And when they understand it themselves and they come to certain conclusions themselves, it has a tendency to stick longer. And Jesus knew this when he had 12 guys for 3 years. And these weren't like super educated guys. These were uneducated fishermen guys for the most part. And he knew he had 3 years to build into them in such a way. And so that's why the questions are so important. So Jesus asked a lot of questions. Let's look at these. I just picked a bunch. There's so many out there. But Jesus, to the teachers of the law, which is easier to say, your sins are forgiven, or to say, get up and walk? That's one of the most offensive things Jesus said back in the day. Well, the most offensive was, I am God. That kind of got everybody fired up. The second one was, hey, your sins are forgiven. Well, who are you to say that only God can forgive sins? He said, yep, that's right. Oh, and that fired him up even more. All right, so a lot of questions. Here we go. He says to the disciples, who do you say that I am? Now, remember, God was God. We believe God was, Jesus was God. He took on human flesh, came to the dark planet. So he knew the answers to these questions. But it struck me so much, so emphatically, that he's still yet asked these questions as part of the coaching process and bringing these guys along. To disciples, who do you say that I am? He knew. He's asking, who do people say that I am? And then he says, what about you? Who do you say that I am? And these disciples verbalized it. Peter said, you're the Christ, the Son of the living God. You're the Messiah. You're it. And he had these guys verbalize this, which was so important. To his betrayer and the soldiers in the garden, who is it that you want? Well, he knew. But I love that. So if you want to read a pretty powerful passage, get into John 18. And all the soldiers come, and he says, hey, who are you looking for? And they say, we're looking for Jesus of Nazareth. And he says, I am he. It's such a great passage where everybody then, like, falls down. Like, I mean, those three words, I am he, and everybody just passed out. And then they came back, too, and it was so great. He asked them again, hey, who are you looking for? What are we doing here? So great. So lots of great questions. Also, on the road to Damascus, remember a guy named Saul eventually became Paul. He was a persecutor of Christians, early Christians, stoned them, killed them, arrested them, threw them in jail. He was on his way to do some more of that on this road to Damascus, and Jesus came in, entered his life, and changed his trajectory of his life in tremendous ways. And he started with a question, "Saul, Saul, what's up, dude?" Something like that. He said, why do you persecute me? Again, Jesus knew, but he started the process of growth and development in Paul's life with a simple question. Simple question. All right, so most importantly for me, as one of the things I want you to take away as you are being developed and allow yourself to be developed and coached, and as you look for opportunities to coach others, to be inquisitive. My whole point here is be inquisitive. Make sure there's questions that you ask. All right, let's dig in. I believe there's four key areas. There's a lot, but four sounds like a good number. Or we'd be here, it'd be Monday morning, I'd still be talking, okay? So there's four things that I think are really important, four ways that Jesus coached his disciples specifically. And I want to unpack those today a little bit in a couple of unique ways. First of all, he challenged them. Very important part of coaching, making sure that people understand that they can do a lot more than they're capable of doing. Very, very important. That's something that I'm working through as a leader right now, where we're having a lot of success in the particular business I'm in right now, which is great. The thing that I look at, and somebody asked me just, I think my wife asked me the other day, why are you so worked up? Aren't things going pretty well? And I said, yeah, but they can be so much more. And I've learned, and something that God's teaching me is obviously to be content and be thankful, but balance that with, as a leader, it's my job to challenge people to go much further than they think they can go, or to be much more successful than they think success looks like. Jesus did that with his disciples. He said in John chapter 4, he said, "My food," said Jesus, "is to do the will of him who sent me and to finish his work." "Don't you have a saying," Jesus said, "it's still 4 months until harvest. I tell you, open your eyes and look at the fields. They are ripe for harvest." He was using that as a way to expand the minds of his disciples. Say, hey, don't just look in just this 5 minutes here. Look beyond. Look at what the possibilities are. Very, very important. When he came to them, when he first was choosing his 12 disciples, what did he say? He said, hey, come follow me. And you think that scene from the movie, the Steve Jobs movie with Ashton Kutcher right at the end, that super dramatic, that must have been like 10 times the drama, right? Because what do those guys do? If Jesus walked on me, he says, hey, come on, follow me. And they're like, all right, cool, I'm in. I mean, so that must have been some pretty powerful drama. So again, he's challenging them to do something more than what their life looks like. When Jesus finished eating, he said to Simon Peter, "Simon, son of John, do you love me more than these?" So this was after Jesus had resurrection, come back to life. He's sitting there with them. He's like, hey, do you love me? Peter's like, yeah, of course. No, do you love me? Yes, of course. Do you love me? He asked him three times. By the third time, Peter's like, come on, man, you're hurting my feelings now, right? But remember, Peter was the same guy who denied him three times. So Jesus, this is so powerful for me because Jesus is saying, hey, man, I'm leaving, right? So I got to make sure you're on board, and I'm going to use questions to challenge you to make sure, because I'm leaving, and it's going to be up to you. And I'm not going to tell you this, but I know that 11 out of 12 of you are going to be killed on behalf of me for your belief in me. And so he was really challenging them to make sure that they were prepared, all right? Challenging others to do more, to be better, is a critical component of developing them. So challenge, very important. Second of all, he encouraged them. He encouraged them. "Very truly, I tell you," John chapter 14, he's talking to the disciples, "whoever believes in me will do the works I've been doing." It's something we looked at last week. Do the works that I've been doing. But not only that, we'll actually do even more. So he's telling them, hey guys, I did some pretty cool things here, but you're going to do even more. So speaking that truth and that encouragement into people. Matthew chapter 5, also known as the Beatitudes, very important one. So if you want a passage to read through next week, Matthew chapter 5 is great. It's full of encouragement. It's things like, blessed are you when people insult you, persecute you, and falsely say all kinds of evil against you because of me. Rejoice and be glad, because great is your reward in heaven. You're the salt of the earth. You're the light of the world. Speaking encouragement into them. This is one, for me, one of the things that's kind of right in my wheelhouse. And it's, again, it's easy for me to do because some of the positions I've had. But I'll encourage you to encourage others. And you've heard this from me before. But find unique ways to do that. Find unique ways to encourage folks to speak good things into them and build them up. It's a very powerful tool when you encourage them. So when I've got coaching sessions with my leaders, one of the first things I start with almost every time is, hey, here's what I see you're doing that's really great. You're driving this, you're making sure that happened, you're keeping them accountable. So really getting specific about the encouragement is really, really important. All right. One of the greatest encouragements that I have for you, and it actually came from God into the prophet Isaiah, and I want to read this to you because it really encouraged me as Jesus is building into me day in and day out. This is one that I've known about, but it kind of came back into my life here just recently. Do you not know? Think of the encouragement here. Now, this is God speaking to the people of Israel through the prophet Isaiah. Do you not know? Have you not heard? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of the ends of the earth. He will not grow tired or weary. And his understanding no one can fathom. He gives strength to the weary and increases the power of the weak. Even youths grow tired and weary, and young men stumble and fall. But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will soar on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not be faint. The encouragement is so and so, so important to that. And Jesus did a lot of that, a lot of encouragement. But he also confronted them. That's the third thing. So he challenged them, he encouraged them, but he also confronted them. A lot of times he did, making sure they understood the truth and what it means and how important it is to the trajectory of their lives. Then Jesus told them, this very night you will fall away on account of me. So this was right before he was arrested, right before he was taken to be crucified. He said, hey guys, you all are going to fall away on account of me. And Peter spoke up, love Peter. No way, even if everybody falls away, I'm still going to be standing up for you. And he said, Peter, sorry, man. In case you hadn't noticed, I know everything, and it's not going to happen. The rooster's going to crow three times, or you're going to deny me three times before the rooster crowed. And that happened. So he confronted them with that. He also said, when he rose, he went right before he was arrested, he went to the garden. So if another great passage to read, John chapter 17, it's Jesus' prayer before he's arrested to the Father. It's wonderful, wonderful prayer. But he's really struggling because he knows what's coming. He asked his disciples, hey man, hang, keep watch, help me out, encourage me, pray for me. He comes back, not once, not twice, but three times. They're sleeping. And so he confronts them with it. Guys, really? Are you sleeping? Really? Again? Get up and pray so that you will not fall into temptation. So he's confronting, he used this confrontation. Some people, myself included, we all need somebody in our lives that confronts us with things. Hey, not working out right. You think it's working, it's not. And obviously that's got to be done the right way. And again, I'll encourage you to use questions to get to that. Because oftentimes, especially in confrontation, people get, you know, the walls go up and people, you know, they're not willing to accept, even if it's true, some of the things that you're given. So that's why coaching is a process and very important, especially in the confrontational piece. Fourth, he served them. This is probably one of the most important. Jesus served his disciples, the God of the universe, served. So some of the most important examples, obviously, are when Jesus washed the feet of the disciples. Right at the Last Supper, he's washing their feet. And if you recall that at all, Peter says, hey, you're not going to wash. And he finally gets to Peter. And again, Peter's just, you know, wonderfully emotional. He says, hey, you're not going to wash my feet. Like, no way. Like, I won't let that happen. Not as a pride thing, but you're the God of the universe. I'm not going to let you wash my feet. And Jesus said, hey, unless I wash your feet, then none of you will be clean. So then that's when Peter said, fine, my feet and my hands and my head also, do it all. So he served them. That's the most important. He also, when he rose from the dead, he served them. But there's a nice passage where he served them breakfast in John chapter 21. Standing on the shore, starts a fire, which probably would have been really cool to see how he did that. Starts a fire, starts cooking some bread and some fish. So he's serving, God of the universe, serving these guys, building into them. One of the most important passages is out of Philippians. So this is written by Paul to the church in Philippi. Remember, Paul was Saul and came into the whole interaction with Jesus with one question: man, what are you doing? Why are you persecuting me? So now this is Paul on a different trajectory in his life because of what Jesus did for him. He says this about Jesus: in your relationship with one another, he says, Philippians 2, have the same mindset of Christ Jesus, who being in the very nature of God, and this is where the service piece, serving others comes in, so important, did not consider equality with God something to be grasped or used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant, being made in human likeness, God in the flesh, in the dark planet, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself by becoming obedient to death, even death on a cross. So the ultimate king becomes the ultimate servant, and he calls us to do the same. And one thing I know about leadership is the higher and the bigger the title, the more important it is to serve. And that's what Jesus did. That's a perfect picture. I mean, the one guy who could have come down and said, hey, you're going to do this and you're going to do that. Oh, why, you ask? Because I'm the man. Instead, he came down, lived a perfect life by serving others. He said very clearly, hey, I didn't come here to be served, but to serve. So it's a great picture of that. So it's about being intentional about growth. So if we look at that continuum again, high character, high competence, let's look at it from in terms of high intentionality and high growth gives us unlimited good. And using coaching and development of others and being intentional about that is really, really important. So being in leadership positions specifically, officially, has given me a lot of opportunity to coach other people, especially I've learned you got to be intentional about it, but it's also given me the blessings of being able to get some good feedback from folks that I've invested in and coached. So I captured a few of those just recently that came my way, and I want to share them with you, not as a, hey, you know, breaking my arm to pat myself on the back, but just as an example of what the value people get out of when folks are intentional about growing them, intentional about helping them, intentional about challenging them and confronting them and encouraging them. All right, so a couple recently, one said this: I just wanted to take another moment to thank you for all that you've done for me over my time working with you. You truly had the courage to develop others. So if you were with me a few months ago when I was here, I shared some of my 5 leadership keys. That was one of them. So he dropped that in there, probably sucking up a little bit, but he doesn't have to anymore because he didn't work for me. But he added that in there, which is great. You taught me so much about being a good leader. It's my goal that I can lead my new team as well as you led me. I will stretch them like you did me, or challenge them like you did me. And we are already talking about that word that starts with a G and ends with an H, which is growth. Another one recently said, hey, I want to sincerely thank you for all that you've done for me. Your investment in my career through sales training, coaching, and personal interaction means a lot to me. So those are just a couple of examples that I've had an opportunity, again, to coach others. And sometimes you might not get that direct feedback because you, for whatever the circumstances are, but it doesn't change the fact of how important it is to be intentional about coaching and developing others. So Kurt's going to come up in a few minutes and talk about next steps. But I want you to think about two things as I go. First of all, think of someone in your life, in your sphere of influence, that you can speak some truth into, that you can come alongside and you can challenge them, you can encourage them, you can confront them, you can serve them in certain ways. I encourage you to think about, because it doesn't matter what your title is. Maybe you don't even have a title. But we're called to help develop and grow people, especially in Christ. And then some of you are here today, and I want to speak specifically to you, that you haven't given your life to Jesus. And you're still working through that, and you're still trying to figure out exactly what that looks like. There's a master coach that we've talked about, the master coach, Jesus, who we've seen, and there's so much more to this. There's so much more to unwrap about who Jesus is and what he did and how he built in and how he developed and how he used questions and how he used stories to build truth into people. He's here. He's close. And there's nothing that you've done, or there's nothing that you will do that will help him or make him or encourage him to love you any more or any less. He loves you no matter what. And the most important thing you can do in all of this life is to receive him and allow him to come in. A wonderful thing about Jesus and a life with Jesus is it's like the second grade basketball team. There are no cuts. If you want in, you're in. But be mindful of this. He'll find you. He doesn't care where you are. He doesn't care where you've been. He'll find you where you are, as long as you're intentional about inviting him in, and he will build you from there. He's the master. He's the master coach. And he's, remember, and know this, when you do, when you give your intention to him, to allow him in, one thing I've learned, he is intentional about not leaving you where he found you. He will change the trajectory of your life in wonderful, wonderful, and most important, eternal ways.